Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Embassies to Israel are in Tel Aviv for a reason. The status of the ancient, sacred city of Jerusalem has long been something expected to be resolved in peace negotiations between Israelis and Palestinians in a final settlement. But the Trump White House is talking about moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. Giving U.S. recognition to Jerusalem as Israel's capital, maybe this week. No president has done that. The implications could be enormous. This hour on Point, President Trump and Jerusalem. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What happens if Jerusalem is recognized as Israel's capital before a peace agreement? The president, as a candidate, promised this. Mike Pence has talked about it for a long time. Last week, Mike Pence spoke at an event in Queens celebrating the 70th anniversary of the United Nations vote calling for the establishment of a Jewish state. Here he is, the vice president of the United States, talking about moving the U.S. embassy.
And while for the past 20 years, Congress and successive administrations have expressed a willingness to move our embassy, as we speak, President Donald Trump is actively considering when and how to move the American embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
On Friday, word coming out of sources in the White House saying that it could be this week, could be tomorrow, Wednesday. The president might announce moving the embassy, might announce U.S. recognition of Israel over the weekend. Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, point man on a new Trump plan for peace negotiations or a potential peace deal, was at the Saban Forum at the Brookings Institution in Washington. He said that President Trump is still weighing his options on Jerusalem.
He's still looking at a lot of different facts, and that when he makes his decision, he'll be the one to want to tell you, not me.
Palestinians and Israelis watching this extremely closely. This would be a big change. Warnings of uproar in the Palestinian community if this comes from Israel. Here's the Ministry of Communications saying Israelis want the president to keep his promise of recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Interpreted here by Voice of America.
I think that the U.S. president knows and understands the needs of the region, and by validating Jerusalem as the eternal united capital of the state of Israel, it's something he declared he wanted, and I think that by implementing it, he is sending an important message.
It would be a big change if it comes. Joining me first today from Jerusalem is Joseph Federman, bureau chief for Israel and the Palestinian territories for the Associated Press, chairman of the Foreign Press Association there. Joseph Federman, thank you very much for joining us today. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Can you give us the backstory here? Remind our listeners who may not have followed this as closely as so many do where you're sitting today, why the fate of Jerusalem is so key here and the history that has left these competing claims for it.
Well, yeah, the story, in many ways, it goes back thousands of years. The Jewish people claim this connection, this ancient historic and religious connection, going back to the biblical temples and even before that. So it is a deeply, for the Israelis, a very deeply emotional and religious and historical attachment to the city. At the same time, the Palestinians in the Muslim world have an equally strong connection to the city. In the old city of Jerusalem, which is where all of the holy sites or the major holy sites are all concentrated, you have Jewish and Muslim holy sites literally on top of one another. So the conflict in many ways, there are many issues in this conflict, but in many ways it boils down to these conflicting claims, not only to Jerusalem, but really to small pieces of the old city of Jerusalem, where you have the same site that is home to the ancient biblical temples, that is now home to the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock, which people recognize from photos of Jerusalem. It's all there in one place. And taking sides and giving this city to one side or the other is just so emotional, it could set off all sorts of sensitivities.
Bring it into the 20th century, the founding of Israel, how Jerusalem's future was seen then, the 1967 war and Israel effectively taking over the city.
Yeah, Israel captured East Jerusalem, which is where the old city is, in the 67 war, and very shortly afterwards annexed that area. That annexation has never been internationally recognized. Yet, on a day-to-day basis, Israel controls the city. The city, it's an open city. There's no boundary between East and West. People can move around freely back and forth. So on one hand, Jerusalem, in many ways, it's an open and undivided city, yet here we are 5 decades later, it's still deeply divided in many other ways.
1993, Israelis and Palestinians came to agreement that the end result in Jerusalem would be decided in a final settlement out of peace negotiations. But the Palestinians want to see East Jerusalem as their capital, and Israel, what are the stances?
Yeah, those positions haven't changed, and that's always been one of the deal breakers, if not the deal breaker in any potential deal. When both sides want the same piece of land and neither side wants to compromise on that, there have been some attempts at creative solutions, maybe either shared sovereignty or international control over these sites, but they've never been able to work out a system to do that. And sometimes, you know, living here, you wonder if it's even possible on a practical level where you have this one big, large, in many ways, integrated city, and the thought of dividing it, even for people who do support a two-state solution, who do support a Palestinian state, the practicalities of ever dividing that city again seem very difficult.
Back to 1995, and you had an act of Congress that went through saying the U.S. Embassy should move there. But every president since then, Republican, Democrat, everybody, every 6 months has signed a waiver that has postponed that or put that off. Donald Trump did that in June. There's another signing that's due right now, in effect. If he doesn't sign that, what's the implication, Joseph?
That's a great question, because apparently the deadline was yesterday and apparently it wasn't signed. So I think there's some debate now whether does this automatically trigger the move of the embassy. I don't think so. Lawyers are very good at bending rules and figuring out ways around that. But at some point, whether it's today or most likely tomorrow, he does have to announce a decision on what his plans are. And you know, he's put himself in a bit of a difficult situation when on the campaign trail, he made a promise to move that embassy. And now that he's in the White House, I think he's learning and seeing that it's not that easy to do so, just like his predecessors learned.
We've seen in recent days Palestinians really upset about the prospect of this, warning of all kinds of trouble if this would happen, but also stories that Saudi Arabia may be pressuring Palestinians to accept new circumstances toward kind of new vision of a resolution here. What do you know about that, Joseph?
Yeah, that rumor has been bouncing around for a few weeks. Saudi Arabia is believed to be playing some sort of behind-the-scenes role. Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law and chief, he's in charge of the Mideast peace efforts. He paid a visit to Saudi Arabia, I think, a month or two ago. So everybody knows that Saudi Arabia is supposed to play some sort of role in bringing the sides together and maybe in creating more of a region-wide peace agreement. But all indications, including today a statement from the kingdom, it appears that the Saudis are not prepared to compromise on the Jerusalem issue, and they're not prepared to sell out the Palestinians on this.
What about response from elsewhere around the region, Israel's other neighbors and beyond, to the possibility?
Yeah, well, Jordan, which plays a very important role because Jordan controlled East Jerusalem before Israel captured it in 1967, and they continue to play this custodial role over the Muslim holy sites in the old city. Jordan has been very outspoken in urging the U.S. Not to do this. The King of Jordan was in Washington last week, I believe, really pressing hard not to do this. And Jordan is an important ally to the Americans and to the Israelis. They are a moderate Arab country. They're an important ally in the battle against you know, more radical elements in this region. So the U.S. and even Israel, I think, are going to be wary about angering the Jordanians. You know, and then critically, you have the Palestinians who are talking about all sorts of unrest, and they say nonviolent protests. But we have seen many times over the years, nonviolent protests can quickly become violent. And virtually, you know, I was going back through recent history over the past 20 years, almost every wave of violence in the West Bank between Israel and the Palestinians has been connected to something connected to Jerusalem. It's a very, very sensitive issue here in the immediate neighborhood and also across the region.
Joseph Federman, please stand by there in Jerusalem. Stephen Simon joins us right now from Amherst, Massachusetts. He's a visiting professor of history at Amherst College, former U.S. National Security Council Senior Director for the Middle East under Presidents Obama and Clinton. He is author of Our Separate Ways, The Struggle for the Future of the U.S.-Israel Alliance. Stephen Simon, thanks for being here. What's going on with all this Trump talk of recognizing Jerusalem and maybe moving the U.S. Embassy there?
I mean, the question I think right now is why he is doing this. There doesn't appear to be a compelling event or circumstance that would cause him to do this. One assumes it's to shore up his base because there's a portion of his political base here in the United States for which Jerusalem is quite an important issue and which has long wanted to see the U.S. embassy move from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. I mean, it's not an irrational thing to do, depending on the context. The move of the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, for example, would be a deft offer on the part of the United States in the end game of a negotiation between Israel and the Palestinians.
How would it be deft? I mean, previous presidents, as it's been commonly understood, have said, well, we'll never get there if we decide the fate of the city before we have a negotiated settlement. The U.S. can't play the role of honest broker if it supports that up front. How does it comprise a deft move, Stephen?
It would be a deft move in the end game of a negotiation. So if the parties were nearly there, but there were crucial concessions that the Palestinians required of the Israelis, that the Israelis were very hesitant to concede, then the offer of the move of the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem might be just the thing in that context.
But we're nowhere near that context, right?
To tip the balance of Israeli thinking.
But we're nowhere near that because some kind of agreement.
Exactly, Tom.
Stephen Simon, please stand by there at Amherst College. Joseph Federman in Jerusalem with the Associated Press. We're talking about whether Donald Trump will say the U.S. recognizes Jerusalem as Israel's capital and what that might mean. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Jerusalem and whether Donald Trump will say the U.S. recognizes it as Israel's capital and what that would mean. Joseph Federman is with us, AP Bureau Chief in Jerusalem, joins us from there today. Stephen Simon is with us, author of Our Separate Ways, joins us from Amherst College, was on the National Security Council with a lot of responsibility for this region. You can join us in this hour. Are you following this? And should the U.S. flip decades of U.S. policy and name Jerusalem Israel's capital without an overall peace agreement? What about the Palestinians here, their history, their claims, and what's driving the Trump reconsideration of U.S. policy? Of course, the president talked about this on the campaign trail. Here he was in March of last year on the trail, in a speech to the country's biggest pro-Israel lobbying group, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, said he would move the U.S. embassy.
We will move the American embassy to the eternal capital of the Jewish people, Jerusalem. And we will send a clear signal that there is no daylight between America and our most reliable ally, the State of Israel.
American evangelicals have also paid a lot of attention to this. Vice President Pence spoke at Christians United for Israel, an event in July this year, promised that President Trump would move the embassy.
This president stands with you. And I promise you that the day will come when President Donald Trump moves the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. It is not a question of if, it is only when.
Palestinians saying there's a world of trouble down that path if the U.S. goes down it. Here was leader of the Palestinian National Initiative, Mustafa Barghouti, talking with Democracy Now! Last December, saying that President Trump looked like he would head down a more dangerous path, he said, than President Obama had been on.
We are facing a situation where such appointments like the appointment of Mr. Friedman, like the talk of some aides of Mr. Trump that settlements do not represent an obstacle to peace, and the fact that he's talking and his aides are talking about moving the embassy to Jerusalem are all perceived as green light by Israeli extremist and racist groups, including racist ministers in the Israeli government.
Mustafa Barghouti there, and talking about Friedman, that's now Ambassador Friedman, President Trump's former personal bankruptcy attorney, very conservative, who is now U.S. Ambassador to Israel. Stephen Simon, what kind of response would you anticipate from the region and from Palestinians if the president should take this step or these steps?
Well, I think it's worth bearing in mind on the Palestinian side that between 2015 and 2016, there was a sharp upsurge in violence, political violence, carried out by Palestinians against Israelis. These attacks exceeded in number the attacks carried out in the, I guess, at the high point, the worst phase of the second intifada, the second uprising in the first half of the 2000s. Most people haven't paid attention to this because the attacks, these suicide attacks in 2015 to 2016 were carried out by people armed with knives, whereas in the Intifada, the attacks were carried out with explosives and the casualties.
You're looking backward. Look forward with us. If the president takes this step, what do you anticipate?
I don't think that you can look forward without looking backward and extrapolate what has happened in the past to the future.
Do that.
And I'd have thought that given the serious tensions that led to this recent wave of suicide attacks, that a declaration on the part of the United States that Jerusalem was entirely Israel's, that is the entirety of Jerusalem, was Israel's, thereby foreclosing the possibility of a Palestinian capital in Jerusalem, would really ratchet up the potential for violence quite seriously.
Joseph Fetterman, in Jerusalem, does this look like the American president acting with impunity? Have things changed in some way that there is not a diplomatic restraint on this or a negotiator's view restraint on this? Has the calculus somehow changed, Joseph?
Yeah, honestly, as I've been thinking about this the past couple of days, and it's really hard to see the upside for doing something right now at this time in the current climate, beyond the the fact that he does want to keep a campaign pledge. He does have his base. He does have good relations with Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu, one of the few world leaders who is really a big Trump supporter. But otherwise, the risks just seem so high, it doesn't make sense why to go forward with this. Not only do you have the risk of violence, which is a pretty good risk, but the peace process that they haven't even launched yet, that Kushner was just talking about, would pretty much go up in smoke, or so it seems. So the more I think about it, why not delay it? Why not wait another 6 months or another year and see what kind of progress you can make on these issues?
Maybe they will, but signals from the White House late last week that it could happen and happen very soon. We're going to go to Israel for an Israeli view in just a moment. We're going to get a Palestinian view here. Joseph Fetterman, Stephen Simon, please stand by. A couple of callers first. New Orleans, Rob is calling. Hi, Rob, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hi. Okay.
I have a question and a statement. Yeah. I wonder how anybody can think that this move will do anything except incite anger and resentment on the part of Palestinians. And I don't know if people realize that there's a serious movement within Israel itself, a peace movement, that Benjamin Netanyahu is not the most popular person. And I'm wondering how anybody, this man said previously that there could be some factor, if they were close to peace, that this factor might be something positive. I'd like to know why it isn't. And also, my question is, how many of the people that you're talking to have actually been there? How many people have actually been to either Israel or to the West Bank? And as a Jew who's been in both Israel and the West Bank, I think people should be required to do that and find out what an occupation really is and how much land on the West Bank has been taken for settlements. Personally, I don't know how they plan to do this, but my opinion is that it'll immediately cause violence. And I think it's simply provocative on the part of Donald Trump and unwise in every possible way.
Rob, we've got it. I'm pretty sure our guests have plenty of experience. I mean, Joseph is sitting there right now in Jerusalem, but I take your points. I'll go to your question on how this could have ultimately play out. A couple more calls first. Imran in Westboro, Massachusetts. Imran, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So I see this largely as an agenda of the evangelicals here, and I think that this is a part of a decades-long arc towards the Middle East. You can go back to the Gulf Wars in Iraq, but it goes back even further. But the idea that, you can control the Middle East as part of a greater kind of evangelical agenda. And I think the latest example of this is Trump's push to revoke the Johnson Amendment and to politicize politics from a religious perspective here in the U.S. to try to fulfill that agenda. And I think that, I know that over here we worry a lot about political Islam, but I think we're going down a track of political Christianity where you will see this agenda start to crystallize even more. And the moving of claiming Jerusalem, I think, as the capital of Israel is kind of part of that pathway. And then if I could just make a final point, is that there's kind of in my mind, there's kind of this weird corollary of manifest destiny in that, we conquered the West and we relegated the Indians to reservations. And I think that that's exactly what we're doing in our policies Palestine.
Imran, we've got it. I mean, certainly Donald Trump has been very attuned to evangelical concerns and when he was cultivating votes as a candidate and beyond, and Vice President Pence extremely attuned on that front. I appreciate your call. One more call, and we'll go to Jerusalem again. Fawn in Maryland, Abingdon, Maryland. Fawn, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm a Presbyterian Methodist, and I just want to say Jerusalem is the capital of the Jewish people of Israel, of Palestine, which is the original name of their homeland as it was enacted after World War II.
What about the Palestinians' claims here and their history here,
Fawn? I'm not going to address that. I don't think they have a claim. They have Mecca. Go to Mecca. So
yeah, but you know that's not, I mean, of course they have.
It's also our capital, yeah. And I don't think that anybody should be disputing it. The Jewish people and the Israelis should make it, and I support fully Donald Trump.
You're saying it's the Christian capital as well? Is that what you said, Fawn?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Did you say it's also the capital for Christians? Is that what I just heard?
Yes, it is. It's where Golgotha and Jesus Christ was crucified. That is the capital, our source for our pilgrimage, for our religion. So Christians, Jewish people, we get along. Mecca. Let the Islam people go there.
But what about their history in Jerusalem, Fawn? Does it mean nothing to you?
They lost those battles 3,000 years ago. Get over it.
Oh, okay. I don't think they would see it that way at all. Fawn, thank you for your call. Let's go again to Israel and Tel Aviv this time, where the U.S. Embassy sits right now. Alon Ben-David joins us. He's senior defense correspondent for Israel Channel 10 TV. Alon Ben-David, thank you for joining us. Welcome back to On Point. How is this issue being seen in Israel? Are people there anticipating that the U.S. president may, in fact, this week recognize Jerusalem as the country's capital?
I think there's a lot of anticipation, but it seems like developments from the recent minutes indicate that we shouldn't expect a dramatic announcement by President Trump. We just heard about a phone conversation between President Trump and the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas. And that took place a few hours after another phone call between French President Macron and President Abbas. Macron's support in France, like the rest of the EU, support completely the Palestinian position of no declaration at this point. And it seems like Trump is trying to get out of that tough position he put himself in. And I'm not sure we're going to hear something dramatic out of him. Although, yes, I have to say, most of the Israelis are expecting such a declaration. Most of the Israelis consider themselves to be the only country in the world that its capital is not recognized by the rest of the world. Its capital for 70 years, way before Israel occupied East Jerusalem. Jerusalem was already the capital of the state of Israel, and it was never recognized. Now, I think many Israelis believe that this wrong should be corrected. Now it's a question of timing. When should it be corrected? In under what circumstances? And I think it's reasonable to see this recognition as an important bargaining chip held by the U.S. and one that should be used when the U.S. will go into negotiations between the parties, trying to help the parties reach some kind of an agreement. And I think many Israelis are looking at the current administration as the only administration in recent decades that has a decent chance of even enforcing some kind of a deal on the parties.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Alon Ben-David in Tel Aviv, how does it work as a bargaining chip if you already recognize Jerusalem as the Israeli capital, which has not been done by the U.S., of course, in all these decades? Aren't you giving away the bargaining? Isn't it done already? What's the bargaining leverage there?
No, I'm saying this should be kept as a bargaining chip to future negotiations. But still, there is a spectrum of decisions that you can make. You can recognize Jerusalem as a capital and still declare that the final borders and the statutes of East Jerusalem will be decided in later negotiations. You can recognize the whole city. You can move the embassy. There's a lot of things that can be done here. There's a spectrum of decisions that can be made. The question, I think, is the timing. I think most Israelis consider that to be the right thing to do. But they question, why now? Will it be constructive right now? And I'm not sure that the answer to that is positive.
Well, how do you see what's going on here? Is there some bigger move afoot, Alon, with the U.S., maybe Jared Kushner talking with the new crown prince in Saudi Arabia, the focus moving away from Israel and the Palestinians to confronting Iran? Is there some huge shifting dynamic here that makes this possible in a way to contemplate that wasn't there before?
Absolutely. I think we are witnessing the creation of a new Middle East, completely realigned, an abandonment of the past ideologies that dominated the region. And now many parts of the Arab world are considering Israel as a legitimate partner, a partner that you can work with and cooperate even on intimate issues such as military and intelligence. So that gives an opportunity, I think, to this administration to come to the region and really strike some kind of an understanding between Israelis and Palestinians. I don't think that most Israelis or Palestinians believe that they will see peace in their lifetime. But I think that we can envision some kind of an agreement if the American administration will be determined enough to push that. And I have to say that the work done mostly by Jason Greenblatt in the last 10, 11 months here...
The U.S. negotiator on this, yes, with Kushner, yes.
And he was mapping the interests of the parties in the region and trying to draft what is the zone of possible agreement between Israelis and Palestinians and how could he mobilize the Arab world to do that. And I think he has been doing a good job. And I think we should expect some kind of draft coming from the American administration, should it survive all the investigations, that I think can give us some kind of hope, even a modest one, that this administration could achieve something that was not achieved before and strike some kind of a deal between us and the Palestinians.
Alon Ben-David at Israel Channel 10 TV. Thank you very much for being with us, Alon.
Thank you.
Joseph Federman, is this for real? Do we see some kind of shifted game board here that makes all this possible, or is this a dream?
No, I agree. There are definitely some shifts going on in the region. The big one is Iran and its influence across the region, its involvement in Syria, which borders Israel to the north, its support for Hezbollah, which is in Lebanon, also on Israel's northern border, its support for Hamas in the Gaza Strip in the past. Israel considers Iran to be its biggest challenge, its biggest foe.
And so does Saudi Arabia right now.
Exactly. So you have this coming together of interests by Israel and some of these more moderate Western-leaning Arab countries. That said, it's really not clear, and sometimes I think there's a little bit of wishful thinking on the Israeli side. It's really not clear how far these Arab countries are willing to go. It does seem clear there's a behind-the-scenes channel with Saudi Arabia. I've heard that there are exchanges of intelligence and information, kind of low-level cooperation. But I would compare it almost to an affair, between couples. It's right now, it's very convenient for both sides. It's giving something to both sides behind the scenes. But if you want to escalate that to a marriage, to a real partnership in public, I don't think it can be done without the Palestinian issue being resolved. And Jared Kushner said so much the other day. He admitted when he was on stage at this Mideast Forum the other day that the Palestinians have to be taken care of for there to be a true region-wide peace.
I'm not sure that recognizing Jerusalem right now would make the Palestinians feel like they're being taken care of, but we'll talk with the Palestinian as soon as we come back. Joseph Fetterman, please stand by. Stephen Simon. We're looking at Jerusalem and whether Donald Trump will say the U.S. recognizes it as Israel's capital. And I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we are talking about Jerusalem and whether Donald Trump will say this week the U.S. recognizes it as Israel's capital. What that would mean, signs last week that he might. This week, not so clear, but it's on the table in a way that it's never been before, with the acuteness of the conversation around it, well in advance of any final settlement here. We've got Joseph Fetterman with us, AP Bureau Chief in Jerusalem. Stephen Simon, author of Our Separate Ways, The Struggle for the Future of the U.S.-Israel Alliance, with us from Amherst College, formerly on the National Security Council. You can join us as well. Do you see some grand new regional design coming from President Trump, from the young Saudi crown prince, from Jared Kushner? Are you ready for a whole new view of the region? Are Israelis and Palestinians becoming a second-tier issue here behind confrontation with Iran? Do you see danger signs all over this or something else? Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, a point man on this stuff, does not speak publicly often, but he did on Sunday. Here he was at the Saban Forum at the Brookings Institution in Washington.
When we started the process of looking at how to create the peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, the first thing a lot of people told us was that it wasn't the right time. The conditions weren't right. After years of distrust, we were really wasting our time to do it. The approach we've taken, even Barak Ravid wrote recently that the president's injected peace back into the discussions, and that's something we're very proud of because we do think it is achievable, and we think that there is a lot of reasons why this is a time, why it should happen.
Talking there about Barak Ravid, diplomatic correspondent for Haaretz newspaper, an Israeli woman told CNN she thought Jerusalem should be recognized as the capital of Israel.
I'm an Israeli woman. I live in Jerusalem. I love Jerusalem.
Palestinians say they want East Jerusalem to be part of their capital. What do you think about that?
I don't like to talk about this. I think Jerusalem is Israeli for Jewish.
Palestinians, another view. Here was one talking with CNN on Monday saying not a good idea to move the embassy, the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
I don't think it's a successful step to move the embassy, Hamis tells me, and it's not the right time to do it. But the Israelis and the Americans have other agendas that we can't change.
Stephen Simon, Joseph Fetterman, please stand by. Halil Shikaki joins us right now, professor of political science, director of the Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research. That's in Ramallah. Since 2005, he's been a senior fellow at the Crown Center for Middle East Studies at Brandeis University. He joins us. Khalil Shikaki, thank you very much for being here. What do you see unfolding in all this talk of Jerusalem recognized as by the U.S. as the Israeli capital?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think we're talking about something that has not happened yet. I think it would be incredible, just unbelievable, that the U.S. president would do something that would be so harmful to his own efforts to bring about peace. He would be shooting Kushner and Greenblatt and Friedman all together in the foot. He would also be impacting Israeli-Palestinian stability in a big way. The potential for a greater Israeli-Palestinian confrontation and violence would be much greater. And the impact on the region, on U.S. Arab and Muslim relations, would also be devastating. I think there is absolutely nothing that unifies moderates and extremists like the issue of Jerusalem. is the one of the most sensitive issues in the entire Arab Jewish and Israeli Palestinian relations, and I think he is tampering with it if he decides to go ahead with this. Unless what he has in mind is something different, unless he plans to place the issue of the recognition of Jerusalem or West Jerusalem as capital of Israel as part of his larger peace plan. If he is to reveal what his peace plan is or part of it and to place that issue in that context, that might be a different story. But if he's just recognizing the Jerusalem as a capital of Israel, I think he would be doing nothing but damage.
Palestinians, of course, have made it clear that they would expect to see East Jerusalem as the capital of in a two-state solution here. Khalil, would you be generous enough just to remind our listeners, because we've heard from callers and guests about the deep Jewish history here, but also about the Palestinian and Muslim history with Jerusalem, why it's so important to them?
Well, for the past 14 centuries, Jerusalem has been one of the holiest sites in Islam, and it certainly has been for the Palestinians. The city that is seen as representing their political aspirations as well as religious devotion. I think the issue of Jerusalem for the Palestinians, of the all the other issues of final status that they would be negotiating with the Israelis, is the most sensitive emotionally and politically, and it's certainly a deal breaker. If Jerusalem is not, East Jerusalem is not the capital of the Palestinian state, there will be no peace, no Israeli-Palestinian peace. And I think the idea that you can bring stability into the region, integrate Israel into an alliance, an Arab-Israeli alliance, is far-fetched in the absence of such a conclusion.
Do you think that President Trump, and we don't know exactly what's behind the word that's come out of the White House that this could even happen this week, though it may well not, but it was very striking how it came out. Is that playing to a domestic U.S. audience, or do you see some new dynamic in the region that might open the way to a new view of Jerusalem status?
I think the only way it makes sense rationally is if it is indeed part and parcel of a peace plan. If he has something in mind in which the issue of Jerusalem is fully addressed, and he wants to begin with Jerusalem in terms of revealing what ideas he has, I think in that sense it might be something worth discussing. But if it is just a step that he's taking in order to appease his own local constituency in the U.S., neglecting all the efforts he has been trying to put in terms of pushing the peace process or maintaining a regional balance and fight against extremism, it certainly would be a big mistake.
Stephen Simon, do you see evidence that there could be, through the efforts of Jared Kushner and his compatriot Greenblatt, could they be ready to pull back the curtain on some big new vision of a peace plan here or not?
Well, it's certainly possible. We really don't know. I mean, normally administrations unveil their big proposal, their principles for peace agreements just before the peace process collapses at the end of their administration. They usually don't start that way. And Jason Greenblatt has said that the administration has no wish to impose an agreement or framework of agreement on the parties. But I really don't see much scope for success. I mean, Israeli society has shifted in a way over the years in a direction that makes it very unlikely that they would sign on to a peace agreement that met Palestinian objectives. So, you know, there are broad structural forces that have just moved Israel in a direction where this is no longer all that relevant, I fear. And
you mean they would just roll over Palestinians' objections? Historically, that's led to lots of trouble. It's no longer a concern for Israel?
Well, you know, I think Israelis feel that, and they have good reason to think that they've got a fair amount of control over the West Bank. It doesn't cost them too much. It's not for nothing that the Palestinian attacks against Israelis have devolved to attacks with knives and hatchets and things like that, rather than explosives. And you know, perhaps if I were an Israeli, I would think, well, yeah. I mean, why would I undertake the kind of risks that would be involved in a peace agreement when I've already dealt with the most serious risks? So. I think it's all a bit far-fetched, as I think Khalil had said. The other thing that I don't quite get is the conviction that the regional situation has changed so radically. I mean, the conditions that that the Israeli correspondent outlined as being new, you know, Iranian ties to Hezbollah and Iranian ties to Hamas and so forth, go back decades.
But certainly the Saudi focus on Iran seems to have been sharply heightened in the last year.
Well, it has. The new de facto leader of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince, has broken a lot of rules. And one of the old rules that he's broken is the sort of the public presentation of Saudi-Israeli ties, security ties. And I think, you know, this is not unimportant. On the other hand, why would the Saudis, under the circumstances, pay for something in the form of public support for an agreement that an Israeli-Palestinian agreement that favored Israeli interests? Why would they pay in that coin for something that they get for free, namely a strong Israeli pressure on the administration in Washington to maintain a tough line with Iran, and the potential for Israel's own application of force to resist Iranian encroachments in the region? The Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs just a couple of weeks ago did something interesting. They sent out a cable to all their diplomatic posts instructing their diplomats to go into host governments and lobby in favor of the Saudi view on Iran and Lebanon. Now, this was a pretty audacious thing, and it quickly became public. So the Israelis are already coming through for the Saudis in a way that would seem to, you know, limit the degree to which the Saudis would ultimately have to come through for Israel on the Palestinian issue, especially when, as Khalil Shikaki has pointed out, the Jerusalem issue is neuralgic for Muslims around the world, particularly, of course, in the region. Yeah. So why Mohammed bin Salman would want to jeopardize the very audacious things that he's trying to do within his own kingdom by stepping into this peace process morass in return for, you know, Israeli animosity to Iran, which is pre-existing and to a large extent justified, in my view.
Not clear to you why he would do that. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's go to our listeners for a second here. Hannah in Nashville, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I tuned in a little bit late, and I don't know if you already addressed this, but I wanted to make sure the listeners know that Jerusalem is in Palestinian territory. Also, I think that my main comment is that this is just so absurd, the idea of moving the capital to Jerusalem. I think that we should be really focusing on treating the Palestinians in a more humane way in the West Bank and in Israel. And that's really all I have to say.
Hannah, I've got it. Remember the Palestinians, their history and their circumstances here, you say. One more here. Jack in Oakland, Maine. Jack, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
There's one thing that really stands out to my mind, and it's pretty well established knowledge right now, that Jared Kushner has given quite a bit of money to groups that sponsor settlements in the West Bank. It's very well documented over past years.
We've read just recently, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there, to me, and I can't stop thinking about the caller that you had from North Carolina, who with a lot of fervor tried to tell everybody who is having this discussion
Yeah.
Exactly where this city should, whose power it should be under.
Yeah,
and
Maryland.
I think it's
yeah.
very, very telling that the Trump administration can take an issue where in one of their top members of, you know, within the administration, Jared Kushner, who's involved financially with settlements directly related to Jerusalem, they're going to turn this into a war of some kind of holy war where Christians and Jewish people should be rallying against any Palestinian effort to prevent this.
Jack, I appreciate your call. Our time grows short here. Halil Shikaki, do you see if the president should take this step or some portion of it, can the U.S. remain the formal position of honest broker that it's always looked for in negotiations here? How does this play out, Halil?
I think for Palestinians and Arabs in general, no. I think the answer is that the U.S. would disqualify itself if it decides to go ahead and do this unilaterally, and it will be seen as total betrayal of its role as an honest broker in the peace process. No one would take U.S. leadership in any credible way.
Is it possible? I mean, we're hearing from Joseph somewhat and from Stephen that maybe the Israelis do no longer have to take Palestinian desires into account, that Stephen says they have control.
I think both are right. Israelis are clearly satisfied with the status quo. But I would also point out that the status quo is possible today because the Palestinian security services and the Israeli security services are coordinating their activities very, very well. And this has proven successful. The reason that there hasn't really been much violence, armed violence, that is to say, is due to this Israeli-Palestinian security coordination. The minute the PA concludes that there is no future for the peace process, the whole thing will change. The Palestinian security services will no longer be coordinating with Israeli security services. It might be the other way around. And so this current stability, this current status quo that the Israelis are happy with is not something that they can take for granted.
Joseph Fetterman in Jerusalem, last word goes to you. Do you see a tinderbox here if something like this should be unveiled?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that maybe we haven't mentioned enough, Jerusalem in many ways, Jerusalem already is Israel's capital. When world leaders yes. come here, they come to Jerusalem. The prime minister, his office, his official residence is here. The parliament building yep. is here. The foreign ministry yep. is here. The Supreme Court.
Just not the embassies.
Functions in Jerusalem already. What is significant here, East Jerusalem to the Palestinians is a dream. It is hope. And if the U.S. takes that away from them with this decision, then we head toward that tinderbox situation that you're talking about.
Well, here's where we stand with the Trump administration in December 2017. I want to thank all three of you for helping light it up for us. Joseph Fetterman, AP Bureau Chief in Jerusalem, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Halil Shikaki at Brandeis University, thank you very much for joining us as well, Halil.
Thank you.
And Stephen Simon, author of Our Separate Ways, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for your calls. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.